Thank you to the Terra Foundation for inviting me to speak today on Mary Cassatt. I'm happy to be here. And I'm also happy that there is interest in Mary Cassatt because she was one of the original French Impressionist group. She was an American born in Pittsburgh, but her family lived in Philadelphia. She came here as a young woman and spent most of her life in Paris and surrounds, went back and forth sometimes to the United States, but not as often as she would have liked because she suffered from really vile seasickness. And so she stayed here most of her life. But interestingly enough, she's not well known in France, but much better known in the United States, where most of her paintings ended up. The question put to me when I was asked to speak was Mary Cassatt political? Did Mary Cassatt's political interests appear in her paintings? And my answer is yes. The themes that Cassatt chose for her work, as well as her interpretation of those themes, were political choices. She saw herself as forward-looking, free-thinking, radical, and feminist. As Cassatt herself wrote to the then Art Institute of Chicago director William M. R. French in 1904, "I was one of the original independents who founded a society where there was to be no jury, no medals, no awards. This was in protest against the government salon." So initially, her part in the Impressionist circle was certainly political, but her subject matter also was political. As her career unfolded, her depictions of women became increasingly progressive and feminist within the political culture of contemporary France. Let me explain what I mean. Early on, the Impressionist explored the boundary between reality and illusion, between the physiological and psychological components of vision. For this reason, they emphasized ocular instruments in their images. Opera glasses in particular symbolized and underscored the act of looking. Illustrations of opera glasses sitting on the ledge of the loge are scattered throughout fashion magazines of the 1870s and 1880s. Similarly, the subject of people looking through opera glasses appeared in illustrated literature, such as Bertol's Comédie de Notre Temps. In Cassatt's Corner of the Loge, or At the Francais, a sketch, opera glasses occupy a central place. In both examples, the protagonists who look at the stage are being looked at as well. The watcher becomes the watched. The spectacle of the theater, seen through a version of spectacles, that is opera glasses, is not just the action on the stage, but in the audience as well. In turn, we as viewers are drawn into this exchange of gazes, which extends the illusion and reminds us of the artificial nature of the canvas. Both Marxist and feminist art historians have discussed this issue of the gaze, or the act of looking, and have interpreted forthright eye contact between a female subject and the viewer as often embodying sexual meaning. According to them, the viewer, who is considered to be male, exerts control over the female subject, who is positioned as an object to be regarded. This control implies sexual content and has prompted these writers to describe eye contact between the presumed male artist or viewer and the female subject or model as the male gaze. Men look, women are looked at. In the late 19th century, viewers of both sexes understood such unabashed visual confrontation to sometimes be the language of the demi-monde. In Cassatt's loge pictures, however, women do not make eye contact with the viewer as here and you see in Renoir on the left. Rather, Cassatt's women usually look off to the side or look away, presumably at the stage or at others. The woman in the Francais, a sketch, sorry, let me just go back there, on the right, is oblivious to those gazing at her, including us, in contrast to the woman in Renoir's theater box who confronts us directly. The differences between these paintings, which were both shown in the 1879 Impressionist exhibition, are very telling. Like Renoir, Cassatt included opera glasses, lights, shimmering fabrics, but unlike Renoir, whose focus was on the radiant beauty of his model, Cassatt emphasized the relationship of the figure to the architecture and lighting of the space around her. The gaze of Renoir's female theater goer is direct, even brazen. Cassatt's women are not just objects to be looked at, rather they are absorbed in looking at the spectacle before them. In some cases, Cassatt's younger women use the language of the fan to enforce their privacy. Because they do not peer over the top of the fan or make eye contact with us, the fan is a protective device. The fan shields them from observation while they themselves can look upon the stage. The fashionable women Cassatt painted were so comfortable being watched that they could detach themselves from the viewer. In Woman in a Loge, the subject, healthy, open, and unrestrained, leans informally on her arm, her parted lips revealing her teeth and the beginning of her laugh. She does not invite our attention by looking at us directly. Rather, she draws us to her because she is clearly enjoying herself and is part of what is going on around her. By depicting her female protagonists in such a way that, more often than not, they look away, Cassatt may have intended to indicate their social respectability, as well as their independence, and marginalize the importance of the male gaze. Again, the onlookers are small in scale, and the mirror further defines and confuses this public space through the many reflections. You see her back in the mirror so that we're looking at the audience in through that mirror. Thus circumventing the masculine conventions of looking, Cassatt rendered us as marginal as the man in the opera glasses with at the Francais. Do you see him up there? Leaning out of the loge, looking at the woman. We see him leaning out of his seat for a better view of our painting's heroine, but he is tiny in comparison, and she does not seem to notice or care. By including and at the same time minimizing this male figure, Cassatt raised the level of her female's independence. Freed from the need or desire to respond either to male interest or to us, and totally engaged in looking herself, Cassatt's theater-going women are self-sufficient and modern. Cassatt's theater images were noted by some of the best eyes in Paris. Edouard Manet's famous bar at the Folies Bergères, painted in 1881-82, features the most famous mirror depicted in late 19th century art. Just as Cassatt had done several years earlier, Manet reflects the audience in the mirror. The mirror reflects the barmaid's back and the face of the man looking directly at the barmaid as she faces him, the customer. The mirror, a brilliant expanse of glittering reflections that underscores the magical and transitory nature of nocturnal entertainment, exhibits a shorthand description of the theater's ambience and audience, including, just to the left of the barmaid, a woman in black looking through opera glasses. While this was a common sight in such environments, Manet may have included these details in homage to Cassatt's achievements in the provocative and original loge pictures she had exhibited in previous years. If so, this constitutes a significant tribute from an artist Cassatt clearly admired as she evolved her own contemporary views of modern life. By 1882, Cassatt had painted her last loge picture and had become increasingly interested in domestic themes. In three of Cassatt's pictures, Woman Reading, On a Balcony, and Portrait of a Lady, the models study the newspaper. Manet also portrayed a smartly dressed female seated in an outdoor cafe reading a periodical. Cafes typically provided reading material for clients in such bamboo holders. But this beautiful young woman is also on display. She sits in a public space and makes herself visible to the viewer through her partially frontal pose. By contrast, Cassatt through various means, such as the obvious relaxation of her sitters, the positions of their heads, the choice of a profile or three-quarter view, a private indoor setting, and a sitter in a casual morning coat, all emphasized that the focus of her models was on the private act of reading. Even while at home, Cassatt's women are connected to the contemporary public world through the newspaper. Cassatt kept her female figures free from objectification and cliché. When they are not reading, they converse, sew, and drink tea. When they are inactive, they seem lost in thought. The Cassatt family was well-read and informed about current events. Cassatt's mother, the model in Portrait of a Lady on the far left, regularly read such newspapers as the Figaro, which she is seen holding here. In the Figaro, she and her family could have learned about the preparations for the International Congress of Women's Rights, held concurrently with the 1878 Exposition Universelle. And the newspaper reported on this at length. By 1877, prohibitions against women holding public meetings had been lifted in anticipation of this upcoming Congress. When it convened, 11 foreign countries and 16 organizations participated. The Congress's main focus was education, as it is in America. Education, feminists argued, should be the same for both sexes, free, compulsory, and not regulated by the church. The Camisée Law, which guaranteed secondary education for girls, was passed in 1880 as part of the legislative alliance between feminists and the liberal Republican government. Between 1879 and 1886, legislation created secondary schools and reformed primary education, making it both free and secular. In another critical arena in 1884, women secured the right to initiate divorce. A contemporary Swedish feminist, Ellen Kay, labeled the 1880s as the century of the woman, and predicted that the 20th century would belong to the child. But the epic of the child had, in fact, already begun by the last quarter of the 19th century. In the 1870s, socialist thinkers helped to draw attention to the welfare of children, particularly those living in poverty. In 1874, France banned employment of persons under the age of 12. In 1881, laws were established to provide all children with free elementary education. By 1885, funding for teachers' salaries and schools had been substantially increased. The following year, the French government instituted an inspection system to assess and enforce national educational standards. During the 1880s, both France and Great Britain enacted legislation that allowed children to be removed from abusive parents. In addition to such governmental intervention, private philanthropies were established to focus on these issues, which resulted in greater professionalism in the areas of social justice, education, and healthcare. Doctors, scientists, and welfare workers began advising mothers on the care of children. After 1870, French scientists and physicians, such as Louis Pasteur, led campaigns to provide a safe milk supply for infants, to develop a science of child rearing, and to involve mothers in the primary care of offspring. Thus, the political advancement of women was tied to a change of status for women in the home. For women to have a meaningful impact on society, they must be in charge of child rearing, and to do so, they needed better educational and professional opportunities. Many of the reformers of the 1880s and 1890s relied on the medical soundness of mothers breastfeeding their own offspring whenever possible. But equally important in this act was creating an elemental bond between mother and child. In addition to providing natural nourishment to infants, experts insisted that mothers must manage their children's health with a regular regimen of hygiene, bathing, exercise, and sleep. Critics commenting on Cassatt's submission to the 6th Impressionist exhibition in 1881 singled out for special acclaim her images of children and of women and children together. Joris Carl Huysma found her scenes of figures in interiors and gardens and her portraits of children to be fresh and personal, And I quote, "But of course," he continued, "a woman is equipped to paint childhood. There is a special feeling men would be unable to render unless they are particularly sensitive and nervous. Their fingers are far too big not to leave some rough and awkward mark." Huysmans' assumption that children are best represented by women reflects his acceptance of stereotypes concerning both the domestic role of women and the inferiority of women painters. But it also attests to a new sense of the importance of depicting childhood and motherhood. Cassatt's focus on these themes was as timely as her earlier exploration of the modern entertainments and domestic activities of comfortable middle-class life. Huysmans' attention to the artist's hands as an indication of femininity was also important. Unlike proper French women of the day, Cassatt used her hands not only for expression, but also for work. It is no coincidence that in Degas' portrait of her, her hands figure prominently. By the way, she hated this portrait. In the portrait, Degas chose to paint Cassatt leaning forward aggressively and unself-consciously on her chair, her hands spread open with what I believe are carte de visite, thrust forward, spread out like one of the fans in her loge pictures. Later, the critic Félix Fénéon wrote of the hands of the figures in her color prints. And he said, I quote, "Always these large, beautiful, masculine hands that Cassatt likes to give her women. They have decorative functions, especially when set against the bodies of naked infants. They disturb the lines, then blend with them to create unexpected arabesques." As Fénéon clearly understood, hands play a vital role in Cassatt's maternal themes. For example, the child's bath, the strong, mature hands of the mother or nurse are juxtaposed with the child's less confident, clinging pair. In this patterned, tight interior space, as in most of Cassatt's pictures of adults and children, touching hands and encircling arms reinforce a feeling of protection and intimacy. Cassatt's compositions of 1880 and after, depicting children being bathed, dressed, read to, held, nursed, or napping, reflect the most advanced ideas about the importance of maternity and the raising of children. As she concentrated increasingly on maternal images, she retained the highly formal structure of her earlier loge and domestic compositions, but narrowed her focus, enlarging her figures of women and children in order to emphasize caretaking and physical contact. This pastel, Mother and Child, for example, exhibits her continuing interest in pattern, but addresses primarily the powerful emotional bond between the two subjects. These conjoined faceless figures, like many of Cassatt's models, were not literally mothers and their offspring, but rather children posed with various family members, servants, or professional models. Thus, Cassatt's depictions of maternity are not literal. They are at once symbolic and physically evocative representations of the intimacies and sensual nature of childcare under the control of women. And in Cassatt's upper middle class world, maternity was the only acceptable public expression of female sexuality. Respectable sensuality and sexuality could be shown through the relationship between women and children. But Cassatt was also drawn to the bathing theme because it allowed her to explore private actions, the sensuousness of water and touch, and the nude. The child's bath suggests a number of levels of intimacy. These both have the same title, a few years apart. They suggest the intimacy between an adult and a child who regard and touch each other. In a work executed a decade apart, the figures do not look at each other, but rather at their reflections in the water. That's the one on the left. Strong modeling, firm drawing, and the child's compact and oddly proportioned body impart an unequivocal, unidealized physicality to the scene. This tactility, in combination with the way the two bodies intertwine, produce a feeling of great tenderness. Cassatt's bath subjects are distinguished from those of Degas in that they rarely depict adult nudes. Women artists in France had limited opportunities to paint the nude since they were excluded from the École des Beaux-Arts, Paris, until 1897. However, Cassatt had access to paid models, As early as 1871, the artist wrote that she had engaged a male model and was looking for a female one as well. The absence from her oeuvre of adult nudes may have been a conscious choice. The subject was considered the province of men, an opportunity for them to portray women as erotic objects. Cassatt rejected this view of women, choosing instead to favor the moral sensibility and totality of their lives as her theme, and to allude to female sexuality through the representation of maternal relationships. In her work, the act of touching between adult females and children seems to suggest enormous emotional and physical satisfaction. Even a woman who bears her breast to nurse an infant does not have an erotic role, but rather an emotional and physical connection between the woman and child and the nourishment it produces. For Cassatt, it seems to have been sufficient to limit her exploration of the nude body to that of the very young. In showing fully dressed women and partially covered or nude children, she negated any possible suggestion of reciprocal pleasurable sexual feelings. The artist relegated the sensual aspect of the adult-child relationship to a proper sphere, the sanctity of motherhood, where such intimacy is permitted. In Cassatt's work, child nudity is not sexual, but natural and sensual, symbolizing goodness, purity, and lack of artifice. As Sigmund Freud was to write, quote, "Small children are essentially without shame and show an unmistakable satisfaction in exposing their bodies." It is not surprising that Cassatt turned to Italian Renaissance models of the Madonna and child theme for inspiration. While such themes provided reference, Cassatt secularized these models to create her own visual language, a language she had evolved to express her increasing belief that women are the primary procreative element in society, as well as her growing dedication to depicting and celebrating them. By the 1890s, Cassatt had tempered her impressionist style to embrace the bold color areas and large flattened patterns of symbolism to create themes of the Holy Family or Madonna and Child within a contemporary setting. During the decade of the 1890s, her feminist viewpoint became increasingly forceful. She celebrated women and the complexity of their lives, their importance as a moral and civilizing force, and their ability to change the world. Her depictions of women and children in gardens allowed her to equate femininity and maternity with the biological and natural world, also in line with the naturalism of symbolist art. By 1892, Cassatt had been invited by Mrs. Potter Palmer, patron of the Art Institute of Chicago, through Sarah Hollowell, the Art Institute's European representative, to paint a mural for the Women's Building at the 1893 Chicago Columbian World's Fair. Mrs. Palmer suggested that Mary Fairchild McManus paint a mural of primitive woman, and Cassatt paint the subject of modern woman. For Cassatt, this was a challenging assignment. Not only was the mural big, 58 by 14 feet, but she had to find a meaningful way to allegorize modernity. She described her goals for the work in a letter to Palmer, and I quote, "I took for the subject of the central and largest composition young women plucking the fruits of knowledge or science, and that enabled pores and allowed for a brilliancy of color. I have tried to make the general effect as bright, as gay, as amusing as possible. The occasion is one of rejoicing, a great national fete. I will still have place on the side panels for two compositions. One, which I will begin immediately, is Young Girls Pursuing Fame. That's on the left. This seems to me very modern, and besides will give me an opportunity for some figures in clinging draperies. The other panel will represent the arts, music, dancing, and all treated in the most modern way." And here you can see those two sections enlarged. One of her critics said that these were modern dresses by Worth. The foreground of the centerpiece young women picking the fruits of knowledge, depicted 10 women of various ages, each garbed in contemporary dress, working together to harvest fruit from an orchard. In the left-hand panel, young girls pursuing fame, there it's on the left, three girls chased by geese try to overtake a flying naked child. At the right, the arts, music, and dancing, a young female symbolizing the visual arts sits demurely watching a figure strumming a banjo and another performing a skirt dance. A common horizon line unites the three parts, as does the wide decorative border framing the top and bottom. Cassatt also used two vertical bands to separate the central panel from the flanking scenes. Both the skirt dance and the banjo playing were popular fads for middle-class women in the United States in the 1880s and point to Cassatt's familiarity with modern trends. Cassatt looked to contemporary sources as well. In 1889 and 90, Puvis de Chavannes completed Inter Artes et Naturam, in which he explored the relationship between art and nature. Installed at the Musée des Beaux-Arts Rouen, just 10 miles from Cassatt's residence, the mural features a group of women clothed in modern dress, as opposed to Greco-Roman imagery, and communing in a garden. Among the figures is one in the center who picks fruit from a tree. Critics praised Puvis for his ability to incorporate contemporary elements and still create a sense of universality. In Cassatt's Modern Woman, the woman picking fruit, the girls chasing fame, are all personifications of the arts. All the figures are depicted out of doors. They're all symbolic of creative forces, deeply connected to the ultimate force, that of nature. Moreover, in the examples by Puvis and Cassatt, fruit is passed from a woman to a child, symbolizing the transmission of inherited knowledge from one generation to another. By involving an infant in communal work, both these artists presented maternity as a civilizing force. The emphasis on the specific depiction of women led Cassatt to write to Palmer. An American friend asked me in a rather huffy tone the other day, "Then this is woman apart from her relations to man?" I told him it was. Men are painted in all their vigor on the walls of the other buildings of the fair. To us, the sweetness of childhood, the charm of womanhood. If I have not conveyed some sense of that charm, if I have not been absolutely feminine, then I have failed. One observer wrote that Cassatt's mural reflected her commitment to see in women's everyday activities humanity's highest aspirations. For Cassatt, motherhood constituted the basis of a feminism that extended maternal nurture and protection to the preservation of all life. Cassatt became increasingly political as her palette became emboldened and her compositions more monumental, abstract, and symbolic. She broke with her old friend Degas over the Dreyfus affair, as Philip spoke this morning. She described in a letter to her friend Louisine Havemeyer being on the same train with Madame Dreyfus, and when she got down off the train, the platform was completely silent, and all the men on the train platform removed their hats as Madame Dreyfus walked by. She also defended Dreyfus against anti-Semitism, and she supported Pissarro with gifts of money, as well as sending him students when he was so poor. By 1908, she supported women's suffrage. Her views were further politicized by World War I. Blaming wars on male-dominated governments, she lamented, quote, "Is this wholesale slaughter of men necessary to make women rise to an equality such as they have never before had?" With the help of her friend Louisine Havemeyer, an ardent suffragist, Cassatt came to believe that the ballot box was the only sure way to prevent further folly. Women, she declared, must be up and doing. Let them league themselves to put down war. The artists lived to see women vote in the United States, but not in France, which did not institute universal suffrage until after World War II. This is a picture of Cassatt at her home in Menil Terribus. Above her is one of her favorite objects. It's a fan painted by Degas. In 1926, the year of her death at 83, Cassatt had experienced the age of feminism, the century of the child, the collapse of the artistic academy, and the making of the modern world. Looking back upon her career, she wrote to her friend Theodate Pope that her works had addressed universal meanings beyond the descriptive or the sentimental. Quote, "Almost all my pictures with children have the mother holding them. Would you could hear them talk. Their philosophy would astonish you." And indeed, of all the original Impressionist group, Mary Cassatt gave them a voice. Thank you very much.